Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the podcast where I try and catch you up in the week, even if you have completely disengaged. Perhaps you have spent the week sitting in your back garden in a bikini. If you have, more power to you. Then I can catch you up on the news, on entertainment, on a little bit of culture, on all the stuff that's been going on over the course of the week. It would be totally understandable if you were sitting out in your back garden for the entire week because it has been hot, to state the obvious. And I don't know how many times I said to someone, God, it's really hot, isn't it? And then I felt like an idiot because obviously we all knew that it was very warm. I found myself thinking a lot about my body this week. I don't know if you followed me for a long time, you'll know that I, like many people, have been on a huge journey in terms of the way I feel about my body and accepting my body as a fat person. And I have always been fat, although sometimes I look back at photos of myself when I thought I was really fat and I actually was barely fat at all. But anyway, I was a big kid, I was a big teenager, and I am a big adult. It's been quite a journey, and I've worked really hard to try and unlearn some of the negative things I was taught to feel about myself by the society that we all exist in. And in fact, I wrote my book 6 years ago, Fat Chance, 7 years ago, really, I wrote it, Fat Chance, which was about loads of different things, but partially about that body stuff as well. And I was in such a good place then. And I was looking down at my legs this week as I was wearing my shorts, and I was thinking, God, isn't it great that I wear shorts now? Like, I did, you know, once upon a time, I would have been in this hot weather and I would have had a cardigan on and I would have been wearing black tights. Like, you know, I might have been wearing a dress, but I would have had my opaque tights on because God forbid anyone should see my legs. And, you know, God forbid anyone should see my arms above the elbow, you know, all of these rules I had for myself. And I was thinking how great it is that I don't live by those rules anymore. But at the same time, I have been really struggling recently with body image. I've been having a really hard time. I've been having feelings that I haven't had, you know, in about 7 years. Feelings of real kind of revulsion with myself and a real lack of compassion for myself. And, you know, at times, honestly, I found it hard to kind of walk out the front door or go and enjoy my life because these negative thoughts about myself, purely based on my body's appearance, have been occupying such a huge portion of my mind. And it's a horrible reminder of the way that I used to live. And it's a real struggle. And I wanted to kind of acknowledge it this week because, you know, as someone who I suppose has spent years now encouraging women to try and feel a bit better about themselves and to, you know, maybe disconnect from, you know, their sense of value being connected to their physical being. I think sometimes people think that I'm like the finished product. And I don't think that there is a finished product when it comes to body stuff. I don't think that you could possibly ever get to the point where you're like, oh, that's great, now I love my body, because we still live in a society that teaches us that to live in a bigger body is wrong. Like, we are constantly told that we should be working toward a smaller body, that, you know, a smaller body is better, that we're unhealthy automatically if we have a bigger body. You know, there's so much negativity beamed into us as larger people that, like, you know, you're going to struggle sometimes because you're still receiving those messages every day. And it's a constant battle. Like, I think you have to really work at it to fight against that stuff. And even if you know rationally, as I do, that, you know, when I die, people aren't going to talk about the size of my body. They'll talk about the impact that I had. They'll talk about, you know, my friends will talk about our relationships. My children will talk about me as a mother. Like, it won't be about my body. That's not what I'm here for on this planet. I'm not here for show. I'm here to live. And even though I know that all rationally, and I've literally written a book about it, still, sometimes the negative thoughts get in there and they outweigh the positive. And I want to acknowledge it because I think that probably there are lots of people who feel the same way. And I think post-COVID in this really hot summer is a particularly difficult time because our bodies have changed, most of us, over the last couple of years. And I think hot weather kind of forces you to confront yourself in a different way. But that doesn't mean that I have to stay like this or that you have to stay in a negative space about your body because, you know, I wasted so many years just not doing things, not living the way that I wanted to, not wearing the shorts because I was so concerned about how I looked or what other people might think of me. I certainly don't want to go back there. So what does that mean for me? How do I kind of try and get out of this negative headspace? Well, there's loads of things that I do. One of the things that I do is I redress who I'm following on social media. That's a huge game changer, I think. If you're following people who are, you know, a totally different body type than you, who you spend your day looking at and thinking they're beautiful, and then when you look in the mirror, you see yourself and it's totally different, I think that can have a really negative impact on your life. So I would encourage you to follow people with body types that are similar to you, people who look great, people who dress great, people who feel great. And obviously, I don't think anybody feels great all the time, but you know what I mean. And there are lots of brilliant plus size content creators out there, or whatever size you are, you know, find people who look like you. And that's number one. That really helps. Number two, you know, read stuff by people with bodies like yours. Read the things that maybe have made you feel a bit better. Reread them. I'm going to go back and read my own book. And I know that sounds obnoxious, but, like, you know, I felt good then. I was in a good headspace. I'm going to try and remind myself of what I felt like. And then the third thing is to try and remind myself to have a bit of compassion for myself, you know, to think literally, like, of course my body has changed. I've had two kids. I've lived through a pandemic. I live a great life, which, you know, also includes wine and delicious food. And, you know, sometimes that means that your body's going to get a bit bigger, and that's okay. And I need to remind myself of that. And also I need to take care of myself, you know, in a physical way. And I'm not talking about weight loss at all, but I haven't been moving my body really much at all because I've been working from home. And I, you know, some days I sit at this table that I'm sitting at right now, and I sit here from the start of the day to the end of the day, and that doesn't make me feel good in my physical self. So I've got to get out for a walk sometimes. And, you know, I know that if I'm not, you know, I have a tendency to kind of forget to eat, which I know a lot of people who have stereotypical thoughts about bigger people will find hard to believe, but that's my issue, is that I might not eat until 1 o'clock, and then my body isn't nourished, of course. And, you know, so I need to get back to nourishing myself in my mind the way that I've just described, and in my body. And that is not about restricting food. That's not about dieting. It's not about any of that stuff. It's literally about taking care of myself, nourishing my body, giving my body what it needs, and giving my mind what it needs to get myself back to a good place. But it's going to be a conscious effort. You know, it doesn't come easy when you're fighting all of the negativity that gets beamed at us when it comes to our bodies and our physical selves. And it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't matter how much you know rationally that that's not the most important thing. Sometimes it gets in on you. So if you've been feeling a little bit of that lately, I just want you to know that you're not alone. I'm right there with you, and no one is immune to it, I don't think. Maybe there's one or two exceptions to that rule, but I think most of us have our days where we don't feel so good. But I'm not going to let that dictate my life. And it's been getting into me in that way recently. And I hope that you won't too. So there you go. Whatever you do, try not to be too hard on yourself, because life is hard enough. Now, let's get on with the podcast. This week's podcast is going to take a slightly different shape because this week I did an interview with the wonderful Daisy Edgar-Jones. She is obviously was Marianne in Normal People, and she is the lead in Where the Crawdads Sing, the adaptation of the Delia Owens book. And I was supposed to have 10 minutes with her, which already was a little bit less than I would normally do. And then there was a mix up. So I actually only ended up getting 5 minutes with her. So it's not a full interview, but I've got a 5 minute chat with Daisy Edgar-Jones in the middle of this episode. And that meant I got to spend a little bit longer on the news and a little bit longer on the entertainment stories with Cassie later on. So I hope you enjoy. I think there's a lot of good stories around this week. So I think it is entertaining anyway. So let's get on with it. Let's talk about this week's news with Aoife Moore. Aoife Moore, beaming into us from a cottage in County Clare. How are you?
Up the banner.
You're writing. Obviously, you're working on a book at the moment, so you've sequestered yourself away from your social life to write. Is it very wholesome there?
It's so wholesome. I'm in the second best county in Ireland. I'm in a cottage by the sea. I am both the man and woman in the film Misery. I am the author and also the crazy lady making the author write the book. So I'm here all week writing my book, which has taken over my life.
Yes, that's what happens when you write a book. It is no joke. People say to me all the time, would you write another book? And I'm like, no. It's so hard.
People keep saying to me like, oh, once you write one, you know, you're just dying to write another one. What? And I was like, yeah, that's not me.
That is not my experience. Although I will say this. Like the release period is good. And like, you know, I can see how you could convince yourself in the very immediate aftermath of the book coming out when you're still high on like people reading it and stuff. I can see that you might convince yourself that it's a good idea to do it again. But the only thing
that's keeping me going is I keep thinking about the outfits I'm going to wear to the launches.
This is why we love you. Because
very serious political mind here, worried about what dresses she's going to wear to her book launches.
That's the beauty of Aoife Moore. And that's why we're so lucky to have you. Okay, let's get going because we've got a lot of news to talk about this week. And we're going to start with the weather because it was obviously a mad weather week. And it impacted Europe in a big way. And obviously, you know, we have to acknowledge that climate change was at the root of it.
It was too hot. Anyone with a set of boobs will tell you it was too hot this week.
Yeah.
We know, despite everyone, you know, getting the good weather and going to the beach, this is a climate emergency and this is going to be the coldest summer in your memory from here on out. There was a new report from the Climate Change Advisory Council this week that said Ireland is not prepared for the current climate or the much worse future heat waves and everything that comes along with that, you know, like flooding, coastal surges, all that sort of stuff. We're going to see a lot more frequent extreme weather and we're just not at all prepped for it because our weather has been relatively stable up until now. Ireland recorded its hottest temperature in 135 years on Monday. It was 33 degrees.
Mm.
33 degrees in Ireland. It should not be 33 degrees in Ireland. I remember going to Spain as a child and it being 33 degrees and being like, this is too hot for Spain.
Yeah.
So it's too hot for Spain. It's definitely too hot for Ireland. England also had their hottest day of 40 degrees.
That's just, I mean, it's mad. Like 40 degrees, as you say, if you were going on holiday in Spain and the temperature said 40, you'd be like, oh, that's too hot. In
when
England?
I lived in Melbourne on New Year's Eve, it was 40 degrees and it was so hot I nearly threw up. So, like, there was wildfires in Essex.
It's crazy.
So we're used to seeing wildfires in America, Australia, Greece. And don't get me wrong, there are still wildfires in those places, but there was wildfires in Dagenham. Houses burned down in Dagenham in Essex. People's cars burned out. Thankfully, no one was hurt. But this is the future now. What we need to see is proper dedication to climate. And what I am increasingly worried about, and climate scientists are increasingly worried about, is the cost of living crisis and the war in Ukraine has shown people what tackling climate change might cost and people don't want to do it anymore.
Mm.
You know, the cost of petrol and gas is going up. People keep on using it because they have to, because there's no alternatives. This is what a just transition would be about.
Yeah, there has to be investment in alternatives. I mean, it's that simple. Yeah. Like I drove an electric car. I just had to give it back and I'm I've decided I'm getting another one. I was doing some work with Nifty, this car that does personal leasing of electric cars in Ireland. So I had an electric car from August of last year until now this week, and I filled our primary car, you know, the car that we've had all along, with petrol for the first time since last August this week. And I was, yes, very shocked by the cost of petrol. I knew, like, obviously I'd read about it and stuff, but still, you know, when it's 100 euro from 70 euro as it was last August, you know, you really see how stark it is. And but it just made me realize, like, I've been using this electric car, and I know that electric cars are not completely flawless when it comes to their environmental impact, but they're significantly better than cars that use fossil fuels. And you know, I was just like, why? We all should be driving electric cars. Like, there's just no reason not to. But that takes investment in the infrastructure. And it takes investment in grants, exactly, in making sure that people can afford them. But like, that is a small price to pay when you are literally talking about your grandchildren potentially burning alive.
Yeah, this is the thing. You know, governments claim to be, and it's not just the Irish government, it's governments across Western Europe. They claim to be invested in the climate, and they recognize there's a climate emergency, but nobody wants to say the unpopular thing. And the unpopular thing is we need to spend a lot of money to save the planet.
And not just, I realize it's not just about sexy things like electric cars. Like, I know there's a lot more to it, but we need commitments as well at a corporate level from, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world that they're going to make a change. And it's hard to imagine that that's going to happen anytime soon, but look, we can hope. And we can do our best as individuals, because, you know, look,
just good people trying our best.
I know that us using, you know, bamboo straws is not going to offset Kylie Jenner's 30 minute trips in her private jet. Which I know we'll talk about later on in the episode when I chat to Cassie about the entertainment stories of the week. But, you know, it's still, I think, even just to make an example for our children and to just feel like you're doing something, like, you know, the little changes do make a difference. Although I will fight to the death that paper straws are not the way forward. Bamboo, please. No, so not much better. I'm sure someone's going to message me now and be like, well, bamboo straws are actually really bad as well. But look, you know, we just have to keep taking steps forward is what I'm saying. Now let's talk about UK politics, because obviously last week's hellfire continues.
The Brits, never not at it.
You should just get that tattooed on your forehead.
I know. So the Tory leadership campaign is now down to two candidates. This is so fast moving that from yesterday when you sent me these news topics, I had to throw away the thing you sent me and go and find a new one because it's
updated. I had a feeling that was going to happen, yeah.
The two final candidates in the Tory leadership campaign are the current foreign secretary, a woman called Liz Truss, and Rishi Sunak, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer and is the richest man in the House of Commons. So these two,
you couldn't hear me, but my eyes rolled there, just saying.
These two are quite different, and Liz Truss was very much in Boris Johnson's camp. She refused in the debate the other day to say whether Boris Johnson had done anything wrong. She, I'm sure everyone's seen it, but there's a viral video going around of her kind of best bits in UK politics. And it is, I would urge everyone to watch it. It is absolute comedy gold. She does have this ability, you know, she's just very gaffe prone. Rishi Sunak, on the other hand, you know, he seems very, he portrays this air of, you know, very sensible. He was the Chancellor. You know, obviously they're both Oxford educated. She, Liz Truss, dictated a kind of negative campaign. She at one point tried to insinuate that Rishi Sunak was a socialist. I despair. They are both now going forward. We talked about this before, but it's basically a couple of 1,000 Tory members that will pick the next the Prime Minister of Britain. So it's around 160,000 fee-paying members, half aged over 60, 97% white, and skewing from Maine, from Southern England, and they will vote at the end of next month.
Oh, good. Something to look forward to. Meanwhile, Boris Johnson did his last Prime Minister's questions this week, and he went out just as I suppose you would expect. I mean, what did anyone expect? Obviously, he was going to be ridiculous and arrogant. Like, I mean, that's who he is.
So Boris Johnson's last PMQs, he declared his mission largely accomplished. No mention of the parties that he held during lockdown. No mention of the fact he was a prime minister and was found to be breaking the law and was fined. No mention of the COVID handling. No mention of the cost of living crisis.
No mention of the ignoring allegations of sexual misconduct and promoting people anyway.
Mission accomplished, Louise. Mission accomplished. So his advice for his successor was, oh God, this is laughable. Stay close to the Americans, stick up for the Ukrainians, cut taxes, deregulate where possible, and focus on the road ahead, but always remember to check the rear view mirror. What utter tripe. So as he was leaving, he did finger guns and said, hasta la vista, baby.
Like, this man. How did he get to be who he is? Like, how did he just went from one fiasco, one inappropriate comment, one offensive column to the next, and ended up being the leader of the United Kingdom? Like, how? Politics is broken.
Oh, so broken. Boris will stay in the post until early September when the successor is elected. But because the Houses of Parliament went into recess, that was his last PMQs. Almost all of the Conservative MPs stood up and gave him like a standing ovation and clapped, apart from problematic Queen Theresa May.
Wow.
Who did not clap, but who did eventually stand up. I would say Rishi Sunak does seem to be the favourite, which would mark a change, absolutely, in the Conservative Party, in British history as well. You know, he's Southeast Asian descent. Yeah. So that would be a first for Britain, I think, you know, although that's something that should be welcomed. Neither of these candidates will do much of anything to repair relations between Britain and Ireland. For our part, Liz Truss is currently the foreign secretary and has been found to be an incredibly difficult person to work with when it comes to Brexit and the Northern Ireland Protocol.
Mm.
I would imagine if the politicians in Dublin had a choice, neither would be probably the choice that they would pick, but I think they would pick Rishi Sunak, as he does seem to be a bit more sensible than Liz Truss on all matters. But when it comes to Brexit, I think that's who we'll be pushing for.
Okay. Moving to the US, this week the US passed a law to protect same-sex marriage from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, as we know, the Supreme Court has been off on one for the last couple of months. And we saw, and we spoke recently about the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So the House, there had been concerns that other equality legislation would also be overturned now. Things like interracial marriage and marriage equality, things that, you know, we thought were set in stone in America. You know, everything's up for grabs now. So the US House passed a bill protecting the right to same-sex marriage and interracial marriages. Can't believe it's 2022 and we have to have this conversation.
I know. The fact that interracial marriage is even in the conversation is wild. I mean, it's all wild.
47 House Republicans supported the legislation, but more than three quarters of House Republicans voted against the bill. Some of them didn't give a reason at all. Some of them said that it was a political charade. All 220 House Democrats supported the bill, but it'll now go to the Senate. The Senate has a majority of Republicans, and it looks like it's probably going to be blocked in the Senate. So some Republicans said that they weren't going to bother voting for it because they said, you know, it's political posturing from the Democrats and that these rights themselves are not actually under attack. You know, they're a political charade. It's political messaging. And one Josh Hawley, senator from Missouri, said, I don't think the Supreme Court is going to overturn any of that stuff. Where did we hear that before?
Yeah, I was just going to say, how could you possibly be confident about that? Like, you can't be.
You can't be. But, you know, it's already been said by Justice Clarence Thomas, who is very much seen as like the villain of the Supreme Court. he said that other rulings similar to Roe, including those around same-sex marriage and the right for couples to use contraception, should be reconsidered.
Yeah, and Ted Cruz.
The justices themselves are saying
Yeah, and Ted Cruz, who obviously is a Republican senator from Texas, you probably have heard about him if you follow this stuff at all. Like, he said over the weekend...
I would love to be a Charlton villain, but he isn't even as smart to be a
No, he's not. Villain. But he said over the weekend that the Supreme Court's decision protecting marriage equality was clearly wrong and that state legislatures should revisit the issue. So this is already up for conversation. Do you know what I mean? This isn't like some like pie in the sky thing that has been plucked out that's like, oh, we better protect this to look good. No, like this is a real fear.
It's also not politically expedient. I don't understand, because like the latest poll in June showed that the support for same-sex marriage is at 70% with US adults, in that's Republicans and Democrats. Mm. The poll showed the majority support among both Democrats was 83% and Republicans was 55%. Mm. So it's not even, they're playing to a very small base here.
It's like weird. It's
a tiny ultra-Christian base.
It's Gilead.
But that base is very loud and has a lot of money.
Yeah, this is the problem. Okay, before I let you go, I think this is good news. And I do like to try to find some good news. And there is going to be a new SBHE syllabus, which is social...
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Yeah. So what does SPHE, social, personal and health education? And so this is basically the way that young people are taught about sex and relationships in school. And I didn't realize this, that it hadn't been overhauled since the year 2000.
Yeah, and the church had a say in it then as well.
But that's just wild. I mean, even if you just think about it from the perspective of, like, in the year 2000, that was the year I was in sixth year.
I was nine.
Yeah, shut up. No, I don't mean that. But that was the year I was in sixth year. Like, you know, we had only just gotten mobile phones. Like, smartphones weren't a thing. Apps weren't a thing. Like, social media wasn't a thing, you know, so...
Internet porn would even have been in its...
No, exactly. Yeah. So, like, relationships still have changed.
You know, finding porn magazines in a hedge.
under someone's mattress in your house, perhaps, you know, you never know. But yeah, like, things have changed so much. So it is time that there's an overhaul. Mm-hmm. And I think this is great news.
This is great news. So there was a review of the sex education curriculum in 2019, and it concluded that most students' experience of sex education to date could be summed up as being too little, too late, and too biological. Mm. So this recommendation has come to the Department of Education, and it recommends taking into account issues such as consent, the effects of pornography, sexual expectations, relationships, and LGBT matters. I would love to know what LGBT matters are, but there you are. So the curriculum has now gone out for consultation, and this is open for 12 weeks. The draft review said, you know, it'll cover consent, gender, stereotyping, well-being, relationships, pornography, and the sharing of sexual images, which I think is a really big deal.
Yeah.
Norma Foley, you know, made the point, the education minister made the point, you know, this is a very complex world now that I think even teachers would be quite surprised at what's kind of going on. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the government's zero tolerance strategy to tackle domestic and gender-based violence. And this is all part of it. I think, you know, it's all good to say we're going to open X amount of refuges and we're going to do, you know, they give out X amount of counseling to prisoners. But I think it has to start from the ground up.
Yeah, so we have to get to the root of the problem. 100%. 100%. And like, you know, we're even seeing, I've seen in the criticism of like Love Island this week that like, you know, still adults, young adults are operating in a questionable way within their relationships. So like until we start from the very bottom, and, you know, for me personally, and I know I always wang on about this, but like, you know, consent education has already begun in my house. It began like... You know, the minute my kids had free will, like at an appropriate level, obviously, you know, that's how it has to be. We need to be getting it from the root.
Yeah. And I would say there has been some really scaremongering headlines this week.
Yes, I saw that.
And I would also point out, and I say this all the time, journalists do not pick the headlines. Mm. Do not come for a journalist about the headline. We don't write the headlines. But there was a number of scaremongering headlines this week saying porn is going to be studied in schools. Porn is not going to be studied in schools. What they're going to do is explain what porn is and explain that porn is not like real life.
Yeah.
It is damaging. Porn can be great, obviously, but it has damaging outcomes to young men and young women.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to have to talk about. And until Ireland gets out of this pear clutching mentality of, oh my god, dirty stuff.
Yeah.
We're never going to get out of, you know, the kind of sexist culture that we have created.
But also, all of the statistics, all of the research on the way young people and children, let's be honest, interact with pornography now, because studies show that it's like, you know, most 10-year-olds, have already experienced it in some way, shape, or form. Like, you know, until we acknowledge and accept that, we're not going to be able to do anything about it, because by the time you actually are teaching these young people about pornography and its impact on people's lives, potentially, they're already experts. Like, exactly. They could teach you about it. So, like, you know, yeah, sure, we can stick our head in the sand and pretend. Like, it's not a nice thing to think about, a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old engaging with pornography, but we've got to deal with it.
But with these issues, there's so much of that in Ireland, I think, in other countries as well. But this notion of, I don't agree with that, that makes me really uncomfortable, so I don't want to talk about it or teach children about it or anything like that. It's like, that's not really how it works. Like,
yeah,
when it comes to anything, abortion was the same, sex work is the same. Just because it makes you uncomfortable doesn't mean that we can ignore it. And I think we've ignored it for too long. So I have to give great credit to Norma Foley and especially Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, who, this is all part of her gender violence plan.
Yeah.
You know, the Rape Crisis Network was out already saying that they really welcomed it, and they said, you know, sexual violence remains a persistent and widespread threat to young people. Mm. And that, you know, the normalization of sexual harassment is something that needs to be tackled, and that can only be tackled with what young people are consuming. And, you know, that is porn and, you know, macho kind of society. So, yeah. This is very good news.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I want to clarify on what I said there about statistics. So the ISPCC's annual report in 2016 said that children as young as 6 were viewing porn. And another report in 2018, let me get this right, sorry, I want to make sure I'm accurate, said that 58% of young men reported seeing porn for the first time under the age of 13. So, like, those are the facts, you know, and I would argue that probably hasn't improved since 2018, to be honest. Anyway, look, there we are. It's great news that it's being dealt with in schools. And I hope that we, you know, I think as anybody who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, who has children, is planning on facing this head on as well at home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we have a joined up effort, I think we really can change the dynamics, you know, of sex and relationships for people in Ireland. Aoife Moore, back to your writing.
I know.
Back to misery.
That was such good news. I sang on the podcast.
You are a superstar. I hope you have an absolutely, I can't even speak, wonderful day. Now, before we move on from news, I got an email during the week from a representative from the Terminations for Medical Reasons Ireland group, who obviously support people who need to access terminations for medical reasons. And obviously we heard loads of great work from them during Repeal the 8th and that campaign. And they are still campaigning to advocate for abortion access for people in Ireland who are seeking abortion for fetal abnormality or anomaly or maternal health reasons. And they do really important work. And we spoke a little bit last week about the fact that people in these situations are still being let down. And I think we were just a little bit murky about the kind of current situation for people who need to access terminations on those grounds. So I just want to read a little bit from the email that I got from them to make sure that everybody's on the same page, because I would hate for someone to have listened to last week's episode and think that they can't access when they can, or that you know, certain restrictions affect them, which actually don't. So let's just be completely clear about this. So this is what the email says. It says, as the legislation stands, there is no term limit for termination under fatal fetal anomaly grounds in Ireland. The 12-week limit does not apply, nor does the 3-day wait period. Where the legislation lets us down is that the definition of fatal under the law is incredibly restrictive. Two doctors must agree in good faith that the fetus or baby is likely to die within 28 days of birth to qualify under the legislation. The threat of criminalization that hangs over the physicians often leads them to conclude that they must be certain that the baby will not survive past 28 days. This means that in practice, there is a short list of conditions that doctors are confident in describing as fatal, and outside of those conditions, there is only a very small chance of accessing abortion in Ireland. There is zero provision in the law for termination where the condition is not fatal. Another issue is the inconsistency in applying the law and the guidelines across maternity units, and how much depends on what hospital and doctor the pregnant person attends. So I'm certainly a lot clearer on it. I hope that you are too. And I really, really appreciate Claire from TFMR Ireland for getting in touch and providing that clarification. Now though, let's move on. As I said, I got to have a very quick chat with Daisy Edgar-Jones this week. She was absolutely lovely, I have to say. It was my first time doing that kind of interview, and we'll see, you know, how they work for the podcast. Like, you know, I do definitely need a little bit longer than I ended up getting, but I think it's nice to touch in every once in a while with a big star, and especially someone who's involved in a film like this, which is based on a book that so many of us read. If you haven't read Where the Crawdads Sing, I would highly recommend that you read it before you actually see the film, because the book is spectacular. And you know, sometimes if you see the film first, it can kind of dilute your experience of the book. It's set in the marshlands of Carolina, and the lead character is a girl called Kaya Clark, who grows up in a kind of isolated fashion in a small community in the 50s and 60s in America. It's such a good book. I really enjoyed the film, I have to say. And I was delighted to get a chance to speak to Daisy about her involvement in it. Have a listen to this. Hi, Daisy.
Hello.
First of all, I feel like we have to get it out of the way, and I'm sure other people have said this to you today, but I think we all feel like you're Irish. How do you feel about that?
Oh, that's the coolest thing. That is, I feel very chuffed about that.
Well, I think we're super critical of anyone who ever plays an Irish character, and we're always listening for the mistakes in the accent, but you did such a flawless job of playing Marianne in Normal People. I think we were like, okay, she's ours now.
Okay, thank you. That's lovely.
That experience must have been wild, because it was such a phenomenon and you became so famous so quickly. How was that to kind of handle?
It was a very, very strange time. I mean, I think it was strange because it was so wrapped up in the pandemic for me, and obviously that was a strange experience for all of us. So I think, I think 2020 is definitely a year I'll never forget, but I don't think any of us will. So yeah, it's just been very surreal.
Yeah, I actually hadn't thought about that, because of course it's not like you were out at events or like, you know, out mixing in the world. So it must have been kind of strange to know that you had this, you know, people had this awareness of you, but we weren't actually out in the world kind of experiencing it.
Totally. It was, and I only knew that by the messages I was getting or the things I could read online, but I didn't have any actual real life experience. So it was almost like playing a very strange Sims game, where it was kind of this idea of something, but I had no actual real life experience of what it actually was.
And then when did you have your first kind of real life, oh, okay, things have changed moment?
I think it was probably this year, actually. I mean, I think actually landing this part was maybe one of those, because before I don't know if I'd have had the opportunity to be seen, or, you know, I knew that they'd seen my work, and that was kind of how I got to audition. And so maybe being on a sort of film of this scale was something where I was like, this is wild. But this year probably has been the most I've actually been able to experience in real life kind of interactions with people who'd seen Normal People, and everyone's been always very, very nice. So it is surreal, but it's also really lovely to have those interactions.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask, I presume making the decision in terms of what you're going to do after a project like Normal People, it has got to be kind of high pressure.
I think it's sort of, after Normal People, I was sort of thinking about wanting to take this next few years as sort of my drama school and just trying to play characters I'd never played before and learn everything I could from every filmmaker I work with. And I'm a big movie fan, and I'm very interested in how much a filmmaker can put a stamp on the feel of a project and wanting to kind of be directed by someone. I enjoy being directed, so I think, yeah, that was kind of what I was seeking.
Well, this film, I think, is kind of, well, I mean, it's special for loads of different reasons, but obviously, first of all, the book was such a phenomenal success, and I'm one of those people who read the book and was like, oh, I really hope the movie's good. Do you feel that pressure when you're making a film that is coming after such a successful book?
There is definitely an added pressure, because you know that people sort of have a real, are very sort of married to their version of that character, and I am the same when I read a book. So, and it's really cool being a reader of the book and loving it and coming onto set and seeing how a set designer has also envisioned, you know, the Kaya's house, or the costumer has visioned her clothes. And it's quite fun to be a part of a shared idea of a book. But there is definitely an added pressure. So all you can kind of hope, I think, is to capture the feeling of the story and the tone of it. And then also just accept it's going to be different to what, you know, it's always going to have a different feel to it as well.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things about this part as well, is that obviously when you read the book, you're very much in Kaya's world, in her mind, and there's not a lot of dialogue because obviously Kaya's life is quite isolated. So you really had to use your face a lot during the performance. How was that? Like, how do you even approach that?
I do seem to do a lot of face acting. I think that, well, with scenes like that, I think that's always exciting when you read a script and things aren't always over-explained. They can just be felt. And actually, it's also respecting that an audience has... We are inherently very empathetic and we can read each other very well, and allowing an audience to fill in that character's inner life for them rather than them having to overly explain it all the time. Mm. And it's also fun because it's when you get to see... all the different departments come together to tell or imbue a scene with a feeling. So I'll be doing my acting, my face acting, but then also, you know, if there's a camera up here, we can see that Kai is vulnerable, or, yeah, you know, if it's below, maybe she's in her power a bit more. And then the fun, you know, thing of how music adds a different feeling. So I love all the different elements kind of coming together to create the scene.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I think you guys did such a great job of putting the book on film, and I hope it's a huge success.
Thank you. Thanks. Nice to meet you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Lots and lots and lots of entertainment happening this week, including that film, of course. And we had a lot to talk about. I was so excited to talk to Cassie this week because I haven't been watching Love Island, so I haven't been able to give you any Love Island content on the podcast. But Cassie has been bet into it, as she said, and there has been a lot of criticism of the series, so we got a chance to get into that. I got to tell Cassie all about the Broadway drama with Beanie and Leah and Funny Girl, which I just... it's the drama, Mick. I just love it. It's been so good. So we had loads to talk about. So have a listen to this. Cassie Delaney of Tall Tales Podcasts. I am very excited to chat celebs this week.
I know, it's been a good week.
Yeah, recently there's been some weeks of like just like bleak, really dark news or else stuff yeah. that isn't that exciting. But so much happened this week, starting with Jennifer Affleck.
Oh my God, isn't it? It sounds nice, doesn't it?
No.
I mean, I'm sure he's done Jennifer Affleck before, but it's,
I'm not into Jennifer Affleck.
Is it not Jennifer Lopez Affleck?
I don't
not
think keep, so.
She dropped the Lopez.
She signed her little like statement.
Oh yeah,
thing,
Jennifer Lynn Affleck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know why I love it? Because it's like a real life version of J-Lo's hit movie Marry Me.
I still have not seen Marry Me. I'm
oh my
sorry.
God, Louise, I know I'm you letting have to. Down. You I have know. To. Yes, this is great news. They married 18 years after they postponed their first wedding in a little drive-through in Vegas with the fam. Look thrilled. I heard an interview from the worker in the chapel, and she was like, oh, it was so exciting, we were just about to close and they rocked up as a walk-in and they came in, they got married. And I was like, surely that information should be confidential, like surely she should not be doing press interviews. But like, the excitement from everyone is great.
Look, yeah, because especially when you consider the context, like they called off their wedding right before it happened. It was supposed to happen 18 years ago, mainly because of like pressure from the press and like the hoopla yeah. around the wedding, or at least that's how the story goes. So for them to then do the exact opposite and keep it so small and like just them, I love it.
Yeah, I do truly believe that they are madly, madly in
I do
love.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm delighted for them, and I hope they grow old together and yeah. they laugh about their previous marriages, except the one to Jennifer Garner, because I would die for Jennifer Garner.
Oh, same. Yeah. But I think it seems like they have a good vibe. Ben
yeah, I think
Jennifer
it's fine.
Garner.
And Jen was at home doing her little pretend cooking show while they were getting married.
Which
and I was
love.
Like, she's living her best life.
Yeah.
He's living his best life with J-Lo. Everyone's happy now.
I'm already looking forward to the film that tells the story of Ben and Jen.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But like, who could play Jennifer Lopez?
Well, we don't know them yet, because it won't be for like another 20 years.
That's
I don't
it.
Think
yeah, yeah.
Like, but in 20 years we'll be 45 and
yeah. 12
we'll be yeah. ready to watch this film. It's a beautiful romance. I'm totally for it. I'm just not for Jennifer Affleck personally. I just feel like, you know, J-Lo, your brand is strong, why would you mess
I'm
with it?
I'm not big on taking the names at all anymore. I'm like, you've got a strong name, you've built it out for yourself, keep yeah. it.
I mean, look, I think that everyone should do whatever they want to do. Isn't that like the point of feminism?
Yeah. Or combining the surnames, which I think is a really fun game that you could play before your wedding as well.
Yeah.
Like my partner's name, his second name is Ging, and if we got married, we'd be the House of Del Ging.
I mean, stunning.
Yeah. And instead of being like, you're now married, we want to introduce a new house is born.
Yeah, I love it.
Meet your mothers. Yeah.
We wanted to do that. We did not want to do that. I wanted to do that in my family because I thought you could take the Mac from Mac Shari, and my husband's surname is Spearin, and we could be the Mac Spearins.
Yeah. Doesn't it sound so grand?
It sounds so good. And then we could all have the same name. But no, he wasn't up for it.
Next time.
It's fine.
Next time.
Next time, exactly. He'll love that. He'll love hearing me say that. Anyway, yes. Please, happily ever after for Ben and Jen. They deserve it. Now, this next one, the next two stories are going to be interesting, because one of them you're going to tell me and the other one I'm going to tell you, because I have not been watching Love Island this year. I don't feel good about it. In fact, I have a lot of FOMO. I'm left out of jokes. This is not a position I'm usually in. I make it my business to know what people are talking about. But this year, I was away when it started for the first couple of weeks and I just never got into it. So what's going on? Because there's a lot of criticism
this year. So it started off so strong. It seemed like a good group, good vibes, people matching up with each other. And what has emerged, as it typically does in Love Island, is the behavior of the boys is really unfavorable. So it's, in some instances, it's full-blown coercive, controlling behavior from one contestant who's paired up with Michael Owen's daughter, Gemma Owens, her partner, Luca. They've exchanged I love yous and everything. We are watching that, seeing his reaction to certain situations being very, very controlling. At one point, you know, they do the Mad Movies night where they show previous clips.
Yes. One of the best nights in the series, always.
It's so toxic. Like, it's just, it's
I know,
so,
but it's good television.
Very, very good television. So in one particular clip, there was another contestant, Billy, who came in from Casa Amor. And Luca has accused Billy of flirting with Gemma, which is, you know, not on, because Gemma is his property, the way he sees it. And in this clip, we saw Billy flirt with Gemma. Gemma very much kind of awkwardly in the arena of the flirting, but certainly not flirting back. And Luca's reaction was so incredibly toxic. He was like, fuck this, I'm not speaking to her. You know, if she wants to play this down, I'll go fucking mental. Like, he was really, really, really angry. And it became very, very clear that he was blaming Gemma for Billy's behavior. Then Billy went on this kind of tangent that, look, I wouldn't flirt with someone if I didn't feel there was something there. And I was like, excuse me, what woman has not been in a bar where a man has approached and been very insistent and not picked up polite, cues to leave us alone.
Slash overt.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
I'm not interested.
Or I'm in a relationship, which seems to be the only thing sometimes that some men will respond to, is if you say, oh, no, I'm someone else's property.
Yeah.
even
I'm a lesbian, or I'm gay, yeah, or I'm queer. Like, they're still like, ah.
Are you sure?
Are you sure? There's a vibe
you
here.
You obviously haven't met the right man.
It's like, absolutely not. So it's been really difficult to watch. And in other instances, we've seen the guys call, you know, one contestant who left called his partner pathetic at one point. There's been a lot of like name calling, a lot of control, a lot of bad behavior. You won't hear that, but I'll just...
No, I'm not worried about it. There's a little dog in the room, guys.
Little scary.
A little dog who is digging an imaginary hole. So yeah, if you hear sounds in the background, that's what's happening.
She's getting out of here. So yeah, and then one of the key things as well, they brought back Adam Collard, who was on it in 2018, and he was
a horror,
and had prompted responses from Women's Aid and feminist charities around the UK to say that his behaviour is typical gaslighting. Please be aware of these signs. I think the interesting thing about Love Island is that we can all spot it now much easier. Mm. At the start, it felt like we were just people in our 30s watching young people falling in love, and we were like, that behaviour is unacceptable and really, yeah, really bad, and they don't realise. But to see that the UK, the watchers, or the audience, are responding to it and saying that it's also unacceptable,
yeah,
is really... it's a really positive thing, I think.
Yeah.
But the fact that ITV still have these men on the TV night after night without any repercussion for their behaviour is very, very damaging.
Yeah, because look, I mean, I said like it's very good TV. I was kind of being facetious there because, you know, the thing that you have to remember is that there will be lots of the audience who are watching and who are saying, oh, that's, you know, not on and that's unacceptable. But then there will be men and women watching who will, young men and women, maybe watching on their own with no one else to say that's not cool or whatever, who will look and say, oh, that's how relationships work, or that's how the dynamic
so
between men
dangerous
and women are. I actually saw a TikTok the other day from a mother who was saying, you know, I'm interested. She was kind of going, I'm interested to hear what you think. I watch Love Island with my children, and I think it's a really good thing because she had like a 14 and a 16-year-old son and daughter, and she was saying it means that we can have conversations about the behavior. And she said, it means I can see how my son responds to the men, and I can see kind of what he thinks is right and wrong and what I need to talk to him about. And she was saying, you know, it organically kind of provokes these conversations that you'd have to sit down and have like an awkward conversation
and talking about in hypotheticals and imaginary situations. So yeah, it is really good for that. And
but
it
most
is interesting.
Of them probably aren't watching with their mothers or fathers who can say this isn't okay.
Yeah, I do think I have two younger brothers who are in their 20s, and hearing their response to it is very heartening as well, because they can spot it as being really bad and they're almost laughing at it. They're like, this is incredibly bad behavior. This is absolutely toxic. I cannot believe they're getting away with this, which I'm so glad, because I'm like, at least there are groups of lads. Like, my younger brothers are lads, you know, sports mad guys. And to know that their group of friends can see this as bad behavior is at least some reprieve from it.
Well, I think the thing is as well, the thing with Love Island is that there's a lot of bravado, because not only are these young men in situations, dynamics with women that they might be with in the real world, but they're also probably very hyper conscious of the fact that they're on TV, their mates are watching. And if you think about the way that a certain type of young man wants to impress his mates, or the way he looks in his mates' eyes is like number one, top tier, most important thing, I would imagine the idea of being not only, you know, on TV for your mates, but for every other guy like you in the nation, or, you know, even around the world, is playing into the kind of sensitivity around ownership and pride and all of
that
kind of stuff.
And
as
that
well,
the women are prizes. Yeah. So it's a competitive program as well. You want to get to the top and you want to win the 50k or whatever, but they have really positioned women throughout this entire series and throughout Love Island's history. They've always positioned women as the sexual object to be won by the men, and who's going to get who, and once you have them, then they're yours and that's your match, and you need to move through the competition like this. And it's incredibly toxic. The hypocrisy between how the boys behave and how the girls behave is incredible. You know, even last night, one of the Irish contestant, Dami, was in the bottom. He was sort of almost approached reviewing his behavior. He was like, have I done something wrong? And instead of saying, you know, the fellow guy saying, yeah, well, maybe you messed India around a little bit and the public didn't like that, they were like, no, you're perfect, you're fine, you're absolutely grand, it's Love Island, it is what it is. Whereas when Tasha, one of the contestants, was in the bottom, they were like, yeah, well, she was talking to too many guys. She was talking, you know, she messed Andrew around. And that's,
men and one rule
it's just,
women.
Yeah, it's incredible.
What do you think ITV could do to do a to do better?
I honest to God think they need to have a plant in there and they need to have a 30-something-year-old person who sits in, who's Botoxed up to the gills to look younger and is like, this is not the way you behave.
Yeah.
I think it's a...
We need a Camilla.
Yeah. I think it's a toxic environment for them to be in where their behavior just constantly reinforces, you know, the other's behavior. It's just like this cyclical thing. And if there's nobody in there to challenge that, then they won't change.
So I suppose a more diverse kind of group of people would have a positive impact as well. Because
a couple of queers.
Got one type, please.
Yeah.
If you only have one type of guy and one type of girl.
Yeah.
Then you're going to get that echo chamber effect, I suppose.
Yeah, and they're very, very, very young, very inexperienced in relationships as well. Yeah. So for them to go out there and think that these are normal, you know, young relationships is damaging because you're looking at it and you're like, oh God, the treatment you're going through now and what you're experiencing now is the stuff that's really going to impact you later in life when you go on to build grown-up relationships.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah.
It's definitely going to be challenging for them. I'm surprised ITV haven't stepped in and... done something or changed the vibe.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we'll see. Maybe next year we'll see changes. But then I feel like I say that every year.
Yeah, every year we hope for it and that we still get movie night and Casa Amor and
I know, I feel bad now for saying that movie night is entertaining. Okay, now I get to tell you a story.
Yes.
Okay, I have been living for this drama. And I will say there are real people at the heart of it and I'm trying to keep that in mind. And I do keep that in mind.
Look, it's show business, baby.
It is the ultimate. I mean, it is like something out of the TV series Smash, which I absolutely loved. So, months ago, Beanie Feldstein was announced as Fanny Bryce in the revival of Funny Girl on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Funny Girl, iconic film starring Barbara Streisand, hasn't been revived on Broadway for decades. So it's a huge deal that it's even coming back to Broadway. Yeah. Everybody is delighted that Beanie Feldstein, sister of Jonah Hill, star of Booksmart, this cutie patootie girl who everybody loves.
Adore her.
Is getting this huge opportunity to be the star of this production on Broadway. We've seen her do like little bits of singing. She's best friends with... Ben Platt, is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
He was just a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars and he was in Dear Evan Hansen. Mm-hmm. So they're best friends. And they've
and
done...
And Pitch Perfect, so we know he's a singer, yeah.
Exactly. So they've done duets kind of here and there because they're like lifelong best friends or whatever. So, you know, she could sing. We thought she could sing. The show opens. The reviews are not good.
Yeah.
Poor Beanie is effervescent, but she can't sing the part. Yeah. As well as you need to be the star
of a
big
Broadway part.
Show. It's a huge part. Don't Rain on My Parade. Hello. Yeah. That is not an easy song to sing. So anyway, the whole world is kind of like, oh God, poor Beanie. Like, we love Beanie. And there's a lot of kind of chat in Broadway circles about what they're going to do and rumors that she's going to be recast. And like, but then...
Because they were kind of snubbed at the Tonys as well. There was only
she didn't get any nominations. Yeah. So like, and the whole show, by the way, is not getting well reviewed. It's not just about Beanie. Like, there's good bits, but like, you know, people are not loving this revival. And obviously, like, millions of dollars have gone into it. So this is a business. So anyway, the vibe then comes out that like, no, okay, they're keeping going. They're just going to push through with Beanie. And then Beanie announces that she's going to be leaving the show. She says, I'm going to leave the show in September. I can't remember what reason she gives, but she's like, I'm going to leave the show in September. And everybody's like, okay, fine. And Jane Lynch, Sue Sylvester from Glee, has also been in the show all this time. And she also announces that she's going to leave in September. Then rumors start. Who's going to replace Beanie? Mm-hmm. Because all along in the background, there has been this conversation about Leah Michelle, who obviously we know as...
Rachel Barry.
Thank you. Rachel Barry from Glee. I'm a Glee.
I'm a Glee.
So in the background, people have been like, from day one, from the announcement of Beanie's casting, people are like, oh my God, somewhere Leah Michelle is like throwing a phone at her assistant and smashing plates on the ground and like fuming because Leah Michelle,
notorious,
for her entire career, has wanted to play Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl. And on Glee, she obviously sang Don't Rain on My Parade. And
every chance she got.
It's a whole thing. And she, at one stage, Ryan Murphy had the rights to make Funny Girl into like a series for TV. Or a film for TV, and she was supposed to be, Leah Michelle was lined up to play her. Like, she's spoken about this publicly.
Yeah.
So anyway,
she's manifest.
Yeah. So when you when it becomes clear that Beanie is leaving, all of a sudden it's like, is are they gonna? Could it be Leah Michelle?
So anyway, all of this is going around and the rumors start growing and growing that yes, it is going to be Lea Michele. And then Beanie posts another announcement. She's not going to wait until September. She's going to be leaving in July. And everybody's like, oh my God, what happened? And everybody's like, it's got to be Lea Michele. It's got to be Lea Michele. So then the rumors get stronger and stronger. And then this article comes out. Some well-placed source has given all the dirt. Mm-hmm. Turns out Lea Michele and Beanie Feldstein have the same agent.
I did not know this detail. Uh-huh.
And Lea Michele is getting the role of Bonnie Bryce on Broadway. And Beanie is leaving because she's like, absolutely fuck this. So there's been basically, you know, Beanie was getting the bad reviews and they were supportive, but then she was sick, she got COVID, she was off.
Yeah.
The producers were like really praising her stand-in and there was like a perception that they were being too generous and kind about the stand-in. It was making Beanie look bad, and just basically this well-placed source basically said, I don't think we've treated her very well.
Yeah.
So Beanie comes out and is like, I'm going to leave in July. And you know, then the official cast note comes out that Lea Michele is taking over and the Broadway world explodes. And then poor Beanie gets sick.
Oh no.
So she comes on her Instagram and I felt so sorry for her. And she's like, guys, and her voice is all husky. She's like, I have tonsillitis. I can't perform this
week.
Because
she tried. Yeah. She just gave it.
She tried so hard. She did nothing wrong. Like, it's not her fault that she just doesn't have what she needs for this role.
And she obviously auditioned for it.
Yeah, she shouldn't have been cast in the first place.
Multiple people were exactly. Yes, fine.
So anyway, she's like, she goes, when it rains, it pours, I guess. And you're just like, your heart breaks for her.
Yeah.
But then, so that's the drama with Beanie and Lea Michele. Lea Michele, obviously, never been happier. Dream come true, blah, blah, blah. But what's really interesting as well is that Jane Lynch then comes out and says, I'm actually going to be leaving in July as well. And what actually happens is Jane Lynch's leaving night is the night before Lea Michele starts.
Oh, everyone's gonna be hungover.
Well, the rumor is that Jane Lynch had it in her contract that she wouldn't work with Lea Michele.
But I believe that because
obviously Lea Michele has this
really bad reputation for treating people poorly. Everybody from Glee has come out and said, and particularly Naya Riviera's autobiography, she just laid it all out.
Yeah.
And she was like, Lea Michele is not a nice person. Yeah. She's terrible to work with. There was accusations of racism.
Yeah.
She was
ableism,
bullying, everything. And there's reasons we don't see Lea, because Lea Michele has probably one of the best voices for this kind of role, for this kind of arena. She's up there with, you know, Idina Menzel.
Yeah. 100%.
Who just plays her mother in Glee as well.
Yeah.
Like, so she's incredibly talented. There are reasons we don't see Lea Michele on the TV.
Well, this is the thing that everybody's saying, is that she has a good team, because what people think is that she was advised to just stay away for a couple of years. She stayed away for a good few years, just didn't rear her ugly head, had a baby, and now here she comes and she's going to be amazing. And Cassie, the pièce de résistance is, guess what I did back when this was announced, the whole musical was announced. I was like, I'd like to see Beanie Feldstein on Broadway. I'm going to New York. I bought tickets.
Oh my God. Are you going to see Lea?
I'm going to see Lea Michele.
Oh my God. I'm so jealous. Like, it's going to be incredible.
I was
going
to sell the tickets, to be honest. When I read the reviews, I was like, oh, I'll pick something else, because I'm only going to get to see one show when I'm in New York. And now I'm like, no,
it's going to be incredible. Like, she's definitely the right person for the role, but everyone around her hates her.
It's wild.
Although my favorite Lea Michele adjacent internet gossip thing is the theory that she can't read.
Because when they did the cast announcement, all the comments were like, is someone going to read the script to her?
Yeah.
Or like, who's going to help her? But she can't read.
It's like T-minus 6 weeks for her to learn every word off, because she can't read.
If you haven't heard the Lea Michele can't read thing, give it a little Google.
Very entertaining.
Apparently, like, she's going to be rehearsing in a different building. Like, she's not even going to be in the theater at the same time as Beanie and Jane. Anyway, poor Beanie. Beanie's going to be fine. She just got engaged to her longtime partner. Like, Beanie is super talented. She had an amazing film and television
for
career
film
before.
And TV.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to worry about it. But I think I really feel for her. She's certainly going through it right now.
But at least everyone's on Beanie's side.
Exactly.
No one is excited for.
Everybody's like, poor Beanie.
Yeah.
But like, no harm, no foul.
And at least Beanie can read.
Exactly. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled programming. I just felt like the drama. I just love the drama.
Thank you for that. It was great. Yeah.
I had to bring it in. So Kylie Jenner, we've got to talk about Kylie Jenner and her total lack of self-awareness, just, taste and tact.
But I mean, they must become a point where you are so rich that you just stop knowing what current affairs are.
Well, I
and
think
what's
as well, because she's
world.
Always been so rich,
yeah.
her perception of what's reasonable is completely messed up.
Yeah, they just do not care about the rest of the world. So Kylie Jenner's under criticism this week for there's been some flight logs on her private jet. Now, they're very careful to say we don't know whether she was on this, but the flight logs for her private jet routinely show the jet taking 3-minute flights, 35-minute flights. You know, just really short trips that could
where
be avoided.
Where is a 3-minute flight? Like, where are you going in 3 minutes?
It must be like Dublin to Kildare. Like, what is it?
It's insane. Take a helicopter.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. But she's the plane. And then she had a picture where she tweeted a picture of her private jet and Travis and saying, you know, do you want to take yours or mine? Indicating that they had two private jets. And we know that the Kardashians have a rake of jets and whatever yeah. else. And they just don't do commercial airlines. Like, they're never on a Ryanair
flight. But the thing
flight.
Is, like, I'm willing to accept you don't do commercial airlines. Like, it's obviously not good. It would be better if everybody, when you were going on a plane, you were going on a plane with 200 other people. Like,
yeah.
that would be better, obviously, for the environment. But I will accept that at a certain level of fame, it's going to be tricky and you are flying at irregular times and it might not be realistic for you. Fine. But, like, why can't you share a plane?
Yeah.
Why does Kim have to have her own plane?
Yeah.
Why does Kylie have to have her own plane? Why does Travis have to have his own
and
plane?
They
like,
all
it's ridiculous.
Go to, like, when they all go to Fashion Week in New York, they all take their own individual planes.
It's crazy.
Like, just because their schedules don't line up. I think they need a good calendar manager. But yeah, it's really bad to see. And then to try and make herself more relatable this week, she went on a shopping spree in Target. So it's like, I am like you. I flew my private jet to Target and I bought things here with my kids.
But what annoyed me about the Target thing even was that, like, she, in the Target video, she was like with Stormy and True, who's Chloe's daughter, Stormy. And she was like, haha, they don't want to buy bowls. And then they like went, she had a little clip of the girls looking at toys. And then she just showed this absolutely chock-a-block
yeah.
conveyor belt of toys. Like so many toys, hundreds and hundreds of euro yeah. or dollars worth of toys. And I was just like, even that is gross. Like,
yeah.
you know, it's just the constant excess, like the amount of money that you're spending. Like Bill Gates came out this week and recommitted himself to basically giving away all of his money before
yeah.
he dies, like putting all of his money back into trying to make the planet a better place.
Yeah.
Like, and then you've got a billionaire like Kylie Jenner, you know, flying for 30 minutes or like, you know, someone's flying for 30 minutes on her plane, you know, your plane or mine. And like,
it's
let's
just
buy all
so,
the toys. It's gross.
It is gross. And it's just so awful to see that they're the big, and to wonder how these shitty people became billionaires in the first place.
Well, the thing is, I would argue that Kim, Chloe, Courtney is, I have my own issues with Courtney. Kim and Chloe at least are smart enough to take interest in things
social
that are
issues.
Not just about themselves.
Yeah.
Social issues, you know, and they have done episodes on like homelessness and Planned Parenthood and,
yeah.
you know, women's healthcare. And obviously Kim has done amazing work. There's
yeah.
no denying it in terms of, you know, incarceration of black men, you know, unreasonable incarceration of black men in the US and stuff like that. No getting away from that.
Mm.
But Kylie, there's no redeeming feature. There's no, like,
no,
what is
it's
she
just
doing?
Well.
She's doing nothing that we know of. And, you know, frankly, if she's doing it privately, she needs to start making it public.
It's just to offset, yeah, her
horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And finally, just a little digestif for us.
Lovely. Our little Miriam Margoyle.
Margulies.
Babe. Margulies, sorry.
No, but I like Margoyle because it rhymes with gargoyle.
I was just thinking of Harry Potter. she is just the internet's gem. She's just fabulous. You know, she just pops up every now and then with either like a solid one-liner life advice or a funny story. She was doing this interview this week and she was asked, is there any people that she'd worked with she didn't particularly like? She briefly forgot Arnold Schwarzenegger's name and then remembered and was like, yeah, I don't really like him. He wasn't very nice. He farted in my face. So I believe it. Well,
I believe it.
Too.
And
yeah.
I'm grateful to her for bringing us that piece of information.
Yeah. And I can imagine how acrid that steroid fart would have been.
Oh, Jesus, Cassie.
Yeah.
I hope you're not eating your breakfast.
Leave you on that.
My friend. Cassie Delaney of Tall Tales Podcast Production. Check out Creep Dive. Check out Before Brunch. Those are two of Cassie's podcasts. Both brilliant. Both completely different. Before Brunch, you get to hear Cassie and Megan talk about like current issues and also media and all that kind of stuff. It's very intelligent.
Thank you.
And then in the Creep Dive, you get to listen to Cassie, Jen, and Sophie talk about the
gross
weirdest
things.
Yeah, things that you. Horrendous. It's not always gross, you know. Sometimes it's just weird.
Thank you, Louise.
You're welcome. So we're nearly done for the week. I thank you so much for listening. But before I go, a couple of recommendations. First of all, I actually meant to recommend this a couple of weeks ago, but it's still, you know, I think worth mentioning. This American Life is obviously one of the most successful podcasts in the entire world. And there's no doubt that lots and lots of people have heard of it. I listened to it obsessively years ago, and then I kind of dipped out of it. But my husband suggested that I listen to this particular episode, and I'm really glad that I did. It's episode number 774. It's The Pink House at the Center of the World. And it is an episode that was recorded in and around the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I actually found it quite emotional to listen to. The opening section of the podcast is in an abortion clinic as the news of the overturning of Roe v. Wade happens. So women are literally turned away and the staff of the clinic are understandably panicking, and it's very moving, to be honest. I had to pull over. I was in absolute floods of tears because it is just so devastating to think of the lives that are going to be adversely, that have already been, I'm sure, and are will continue to be adversely affected by this. But it was a really, really good episode. That stuff was really moving. But then they also talked about some of the underground and grassroots work, that's going on to try and support women across America. So if you're interested in that, I definitely would give it a listen. As I said, it's episode 774, The Pink House at the Center of the World. In completely different news, if you want a film to just kind of sink into and enjoy, it won't take a lot of your brain power, it's very beautiful, the people in it are gorgeous, can I recommend Persuasion on Netflix? I've seen some kind of lukewarm reviews for it, but it's very enjoyable. Like, it's not going to win any awards, I don't think, but I don't think you don't need every film you watch to be potentially award winning. It is, of course, based on the Jane Austen book. Dakota Johnson is in it, and she is just really charming in it, I have to say. And it's just such an enjoyable watch. Like, if you like a bit of period drama, this has a good sense of humor about itself. I loved it. 1 hour and 47 minutes, it's not too long. Love it. It's on Netflix, as I said. It's called Persuasion. And yeah, if you're getting your gals together or if you're just going to sit down with a cup of tea, if you manage to swing a couple of hours to yourself, then I highly, highly recommend, because it is very, very enjoyable. So there you go. That is all from me this week. Thank you so much for being with me. I really appreciate it. And I can't stress it enough. I so appreciate it. I really appreciate everyone who comes up and says hi to me. I actually want to apologize because last week at the Trans Pride, Trans and Intersex Pride March, I was there with my two kids, and one of my sons was, he was having a moment, let's just say, the entire time we were there, and we actually had to abandon ship about halfway through the march. And that's just, you know, sometimes that's how parenting goes. But it means I was a bit distracted, and some of you lovely people came and introduced yourself to me, and I don't feel like I was able to kind of give you the time or attention that you deserve. So apologies if you felt like I was a bit kind of all over the place if we met last weekend. I really do love meeting you guys, and I so appreciate you listening. As I always say, if you feel like rating, reviewing, make sure you're subscribed, tell a friend. It all really helps me so that I can keep doing this, and hopefully in the near future do even more. Anyway, there you go. I've waffled on enough. I hope you have a really lovely week. And if it can't be lovely, I hope you just get through it. Tomorrow is a new day, and I will talk to you all next Friday.
Thank you. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.